Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. As the nice lady just said, it is time for our parenting slot. Joanna Fortune, another nice lady, joins us in the studio.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Here's your first question. I kiss my 7-year-old on the lips. Is it something we've always done since, well, birth, really? My mother-in-law recently commented and said I should stop doing that for the child's sake. I brushed past the comment, but now wonder, would it affect my daughter if I continue to do this? She does it as naturally as I do it, and I figure she'll stop doing it if she's uncomfortable. Not sure what to do, really. I don't want to upset her, but also she may not care. I have my mother-in-law's words ringing in my ears. Any advice?
I mean, unsolicited advice is plentiful in the area of parenting. I mean, there's always going to be someone who's going to tell you what you're doing is not right, and that'll ring in your ears because we're wired that way. And I sometimes find that if somebody is giving you this kind of unsolicited advice, a sort of non-committal response, like, oh, you think so? I never thought about it from that point of view, is sufficient an answer and move on and trust your instinct. I mean, I remember this coming up on this slot. Remember around the time the Beckhams were in,
in
the social
thing,
media?
Yeah,
David Beckham had posted a photo kissing their daughter on the lips for her birthday, her 7th birthday or something like that. And I mean, my opinion really hasn't changed. I just don't think there is any way that kissing your young child on the lips is confusing to them. It's not conveying a mixed message in any way, no more than breastfeeding your child isn't, no more than giving a back rub or a back massage to your child isn't. I think children thrive on authentic, meaningful attention and affection from their loved ones. It is vital to their development. And, you know, there are things you can do. So, I mean, first of all, medically, you are advised not to kiss an under 1-year-old on the mouth. And that's largely because they haven't developed antibodies and the cold sore virus and things that can be transferred is high risk, you know, at that very young age. But otherwise, what this parent says, I figure she'll stop doing it if she's uncomfortable. Absolutely, yes. No better than a 7-year-old to say, get off me, don't do that.
Yeah.
And I think that especially if she's initiating the contact and if it is something that is comfortable for both of you, there is no reason at all that you should stop doing that. There's nothing about it for the child's sake. Now, if you're at a stage in your relationship and that kind of affection or expression of affection is something your child is saying to you, let's not do that anymore. There are many ways that you can continue the close contact. Like, I often recommend to parents developing a special handshake, like a 4-part handshake. They do a bit, you might do a handshake, a high five, a fist bump, and a pinky wrap. And that becomes your special handshake. And that's what you do at points of separation and reunification, or a way of expressing affection. You're still doing touch. It's still special between the two of you. And I think it's a nice way of continuing that kind of affection. But if it's working for you and your child, please don't let anyone's voice get in there and make you feel like you're doing something sinister or wrong, because it really isn't.
And I think probably, I suspect at least a lot of parents probably do kiss their kids on the lips up to a certain point when the kids just don't, you know, go, no.
Yeah.
And you can kiss me on the cheek.
Exactly. And you should always follow their direction on that. If your child is saying no, then the answer is no. You certainly don't force it. And, you know, certainly don't force them to kiss other relatives if they don't want to. You know, we talk to them in one way about consent, and then we try and force them to give people hugs and kisses when they don't want to. So I think it's really important that we do listen to our children. But this resistance isn't coming from the child or the parent. It's coming from a mother-in-law.
Yeah. Okay, and it's at this stage of the game, it's not a big deal.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Though kind of people do say that, you know, and I don't know if it's true or not, in France, people kiss their children on the lips all the time up until they're in their 20s. I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't know if that's true, but certainly kissing France is definitely a high-touch society. Mm. So there's lots of kissing and touching and intimacy, even if you're not significantly involved with each other. That's part of culture, and it's culturally normal. So culture plays a big part in all of this.
Yeah, I did see somebody though on the street a couple of years ago who I don't know well. I just kind of know them, say hello to, but it was his mother. And I assume it was his mother, or it was a much older woman who he wasn't married to, but he kisses one on the lips. And I just thought, that's a bit weird. Yeah. I just had that instinctive reaction that that's a bit weird. Even though there's no reason for me to feel that way, particularly if they're both fine with it, then it's not a big thing.
But there's something in us, I think, when we look at something happening, when we react, it's coming from us. It might be, that would be weird for me to do that with my mother.
Yes, yeah.
And so the response is valid, but it's of us rather than of the other person.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. My 8-year-old son is a bit obsessed with God at the moment, as he has just made his communion. He always wants to talk about God and constantly ask questions about him. Most of his pictures he brings home from school have a religious theme. He loved playing with chalk on the footpath, and for the last few months he's been drawing crosses everywhere. I and my husband are atheists, but let him be involved in the communion because he was so enthusiastic. We didn't choose a non-religious school or anything, as we just went with the local school that was close to home and it happened to be Catholic. I feel very conflicted and don't know how happy I am about this obsession, to be honest. My husband tells him to quiet down when we talk at length about God. Should we encourage it, or would that be very confusing if we started talking about atheism? And just before we even get into it, if you're going to send in a text saying, why didn't you send them to a school? I'm just not going to read them out. So just don't bother. Right. Okay.
Well, that's great. So I won't address that point. This is confusing for me. So I imagine, this could be very confusing for a child, because you and your husband are expressly atheist. You sent him to a school where there is a Catholic ethos, and that's fine, because, I mean, look, we could get into that, but lots of schools are and all of that. But at the same time, you did also support him in making his communion and participating in a very explicitly religious ceremony and process. So I guess it's very hard to do that and support that and then say, by the way, our family are atheists. Let's talk to you about that. That's contradictory and potentially very confusing for a child. I think as well, just to normalize some of this, that magical omnipotent thinking is developmentally really normal for children age. And, you know, religious and spirituality and the idea of, you know, dead and back to life and risen again, all of these themes are fascinating to children who really are embracing magical and omnipotent thinking, whereby if I wish it, it can be so.
Yeah.
And so for me, I would say a lot of this exploration is contextualized by the communion process and education he's just been going through in school and that he has experienced, plus his developmental stage. So I think it's quite normal, actually. I think, you know, obviously this kind of content and teaching is part of his school curriculum, and the process that, and how children process information that they take in is by repeating it, reflecting on it, playing out the themes inherent in it. And that's how they develop a deeper understanding and integrate the learning into themselves and making sense of themes like good, bad, right and wrong. Moral thinking is also clicking in at this stage. So all of this is really, really normal. It's beware of the contradictory messages is my big piece. And when dad says, you know, quiet down when he's talking at length about God, my big question is why? Like, why does he need to quieten down? If he was talking about trains or dinosaurs over and over, and that's kind of boring or irritating, would we also say quiet down? So I'd be very aware that you don't shut down his conversation and his interest, but rather show interest in his interest. Oh, you really understand this in a particular way. Thank you for sharing that with me. Here's what I think. And you might now, not that you say you're wrong and I'm right, but you can certainly share your viewpoint. I think it's very good for children to be aware that there are many religions and spiritual practices and belief systems out there, and that theirs is one of those.
Yeah.
So I think that can be very healthy, but I don't think it should be, don't talk about God because you should be speaking atheistically, if that's even a word.
I don't know how one speaks atheistically anyway. Now, I mean, one can say you sent him to a Catholic school. What did you think was going to happen?
And not just sending him to a Catholic school, but also supported him participating in an expressly Catholic ritual. So
Now, in fairness, a lot of parents do that.
Sure.
Because, you know, for all sorts of completely legitimate reasons, as they say, it's the local school.
Completely.
All the other kids are doing it.
I don't judge that at all.
And you wouldn't
totally
judge any
it.
Of that. But at the same time, you can't be kind of, the horse is bolted now.
That's
so,
the
yeah.
piece. So you just happen to have a child who has, I would imagine, a very curious nature and has latched on to all of this spiritual, magical, omnipotent material and gone, fabulous, I'm going to run with this.
Yeah.
I tend to let it run its course.
Yeah. Aren't they, doesn't it behoove them, if they're atheists, which is a conclusion they've come to themselves. Let him come to his own conclusions. Well, I know he's only six and that'll change many times. But
actually, isn't that important? That he's given the space for it to change many times.
Yeah.
And that he'll find his own way through it like all of us have, or, you know, by the time we reach adulthood and we've formulated opinions. I wouldn't make a big deal. I wouldn't see this as a problem. I mean, it might be an irritant to them as parents because it jars so, you know, explicitly with their own belief system or lack of belief system. Mm. But I think they've got to give him space to explore this and develop his own understanding. But sure, mention other belief systems and that can be part of an education as well.
It does indicate, though, how parent-child dynamics are changing over the years now. When he's a bit older, he'll threaten them with the priesthood just to rebel. My daughter is 13 and newly finished first year of secondary school. Since she started in secondary school, she's made a lot more friends, which is great. She was also allowed a mobile phone, so she wouldn't be the odd one out with her friends. In the last 8 months, I've noticed a complete shift in her attitude. Everything is about her friends and her phone, texting, calling them and spending all her time with them. I feel like we never see her anymore, what with school during the day and her friends at weekends. I guess I miss her. Should I limit time she spends with them versus the time she spends with us as a family? I want to be fair, but I'm having trouble deciding how much time is enough. As schoolwork and family should come first.
Yeah, I actually think this is so relatable for people, particularly if it's your first teenager, because this line, I guess I miss her, is probably the bit that really resonates with me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in adolescence, your child goes through, you know, many stages of ultimately pulling away from you. That's the goal, is to separate and individuate and develop a deeper sense of self and a increased autonomy. But with that kind of abandonment, a demand for more privacy and a process of estrangement, actually parents can feel really neglected and that they've lost their little child that they had this really close relationship with. And, oh my goodness, how do I get it back? But actually, if you insist and demand that you stay as close as you ever were, you're actually denying her part of her adolescent development. And you will actually create a tension. Now, there's already going to be tension in parent-adolescent relationships, just to put that in as a side note. But you're actually going to increase it. And I certainly wouldn't make or force a choice between friends versus family, because I'm sorry, parents, you will lose. You will
because
lose every time.
Is it fair enough to say during those years, well, the period in her life the 13-year-old is heading into, her friends actually become more important to her
100%
than
right.
her family?
100% right. And teenagers are digital natives. I mean, we all are to varying extents, but they really are. They live, socialise, communicate online. Now, ideally, she, I hope, is meeting and communicating with her friends in real life as well, that it's not all online, because that's really important. But I think as teenagers grow up, so too must our parenting grow up in line with them.
Yeah.
So the parenting practices that were really effective in childhood become completely redundant in adolescence. And it's not that your parenting is failing or there's anything wrong. It's that your parenting must adjust as they adjust. And that's really important in terms of, you know, if boundaries are okay for sure. And you might set aside a time of the day that is a phone-free time for everybody and that everyone sits around the table and has dinner together and has eye contact and some degree of conversation for the 30 or 40 minutes that's going to take. Or you might designate one room of the house that is a screen-free room. Sometimes in some houses it'd be better to have one room that is a screen room, otherwise no one will ever go into the screen free room. But you can certainly do that, and I would have set family time, but be flexible within that if something crops up that you don't make her resentful spending time with you. And give her notice if there's a very particular family event coming up that she is required to be at granny's 80th birthday party. Let her know in advance that's coming up in 2 weeks. Don't just demand. Of course you're going
there.
And it's tomorrow if you didn't tell her. I just think pick your battles with this one and let her move away from you so that she can find her way back to you.
Just a few comments on some of the things we've been talking about already on the question of the parents who had who are atheists, but they sent their little boy to the local Catholic school who's made communion. He's now fascinated with all of that. Brian says, we are atheists. We raised our now adult children outside of any formal religion. We felt we shouldn't indoctrinate them either way, but that they would be aware of the religion of their grandparents, but aware that we didn't believe that. They grew to make their view, and it was never a matter of conflict. Says mine. Probably, I imagine it's probably easier in Dublin, though. There are many parts of the country where I imagine you don't really have that much choice when it comes to what schools you're going to send them to, when they would tend to be Catholic schools. On the subject of kissing on the lips, my kids used to do it until they reached secondary school. They got too conscious of it and aware, I guess it just wasn't cool anymore. Somebody else says, I still do it with my mum and I'm 35. Who cares? I don't have any strange relationships or had any effects from it. Someone else says, we do it in South Africa. It's a cultural thing.
Absolutely.
So that's it, very interesting. My daughter always kisses her mum on the lips when they meet, and my daughter is 32. Una says, this actually answers my query. I'm married to a French man, and in France, they kiss a lot, but never on the lips. My husband finds it really uncomfortable when my children try and kiss us on the lips. The French cousin think it's really funny, though.
Yeah, because it's different.
It's different. There
difference
you go.
Is always something to be noted.
Right, we do. Next question is about reading with a 7-year-old. We'll talk about that after this break.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us. Referring back to some of the questions we've been talking about. One texter says, we try and have dinner at the table. Now, this is about the teenager kind of migrating away from the family a little bit. We try and have dinner at the table with teenagers every evening. However, by the time I have washed it up, I have dished it up, they're finished. Yeah, that's a problem, all right. The subject of kissing on the lips, when one of my daughters was about 4, I was shopping and she was walking alongside me. She wanted to sit in the trolley, so I lifted her in and wasn't paying attention as I tried to force her two legs into the same hole of the trolley. We've all done that. She protested by saying nothing but crying and screaming. When I realised I got her back out and put her in correctly, I said to her, I'm sorry, and gave her a little kiss on the lips. We got a massive static shock and she started crying again, saying, why did you shock me, Daddy? Other shoppers were looking at me at this stage and I felt like the worst father in the history of the world. Crikey. Like you.
That's just like a series of unfortunate events.
Events, yeah. Yeah. John says, John Snow, it's signed. I kiss my aunt on the lips, nothing weird at all. There you go. Oh, yes, I get it now. It's a Game of Thrones joke. All right. Meaning nothing probably to many people. Right. Does Joanna have any book suggestions for a 7-year-old boy? He's never been a brilliant reader, but we always encourage him. He hates books that are text heavy and we end up reading to him rather than him reading himself. Now, I'm having trouble finding things he's interested in reading. We're past the it's all about pictures book, but not quite into the I'm going to do it all by myself stage. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is really relatable. Now, I love books. I think books are one of the greatest gifts or a love of reading that we can give to children. And I think we have to move away from they must be reading a book. If he will read a comic, or if he will read a magazine, an annual, I would just want him reading and interested in books. I would take whatever angle you can get on this. And when you say, you know, that you end up reading to him rather than him reading himself, I'm not going to stress too much about that. Certainly encourage him to read, but keep this up if it's your only way, and maybe have him draw his favourite part of each book that you're reading or each chapter you've read, and then have him draw a second picture that if he was the author, what would he change? What bit would he add in?
Yeah.
And then you're really having him kind of get interested in the narrative and the story and storytelling as a concept. I think as well, when you're talking about children this age, one of the best ways is to get them interested in a series so that you're not having to fight this battle at the end of every book. Oh, goodness, now we have to go and find another book that they'd be interested in. But if you get them into a series, I think authors like David Walliams are very popular with this age group. I also think, and I always remember myself, that Spike Milligan or Roald Dahl, particularly Revolting Rhymes, have cheeky kind of narrative and pushing boundaries and kind of using a lot of child humor stuff and language that kids find really, really funny.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really great way of getting them interested in books and reading as well. I think bookstore staff, particularly in the children's section, are just a wealth of knowledge. But more than that, and I recently just rejoined our own local library, but bring him to your local library and join him up. The local library run amazing events. They have beautiful children's book sections. They've got knowledgeable staff, and they also do regular events like people coming in to do readings for children, maybe doing some artwork around it, craft workshops. There's tons of stuff that go on in libraries. And I think they're such an underutilized resource. So I would really try and get him invested there. And there's more than books in a library. They do have magazines and journals and annuals and all kinds of things there.
Now, this is an interesting question. My son is 7, almost 8. I'd call him a young 7, though, not terribly mature. At what age is it okay for my son to go into a men's toilet alone? We were shopping over the weekend and I felt he was too old to be in the ladies with me, but he's not enthusiastic about going to the men's by himself.
Yes, this is interesting, and I'm drawing on my very limited knowledge of men's toilets when I answer this. So I am going to, you know, defer to yourself or anyone listening as well. But I tend to think with children, because it's always for me about developmental age, not chronological age. If you've got a young 7-year-old, i.e. who emotionally may be more 5 or 6 even at times, then I'd err on the side of he's not ready. Like, yeah, if in doubt, he's not ready. Now, to get him ready and maybe work towards that, you could have either his dad or an adult male in your life who could escort him into the men's toilets a few times, orientate him to that space, which I'm imagining is at least a little different to the women's toilets, and especially in terms of urinals rather than cubicles all the time. And then have the same, you know, his dad or an adult male, as I said, in his life, who could then set him up after a few co-visits to say, right, you go in on your own and do it, and I'm going to wait outside for you, but I am here, but at that removed level, so that you're actually preparing him for that transition. Because I think it is scary to go into public toilets.
It is scary,
the hand dryers are noisy, there's strangers in there, and you're doing it on your own. I think actually we could underestimate how challenging that can be for a child, so I would prep him and build him up for it experientially.
Yeah, and obviously this is from a mother, but for dads with little girls,
I know,
it's a nightmare.
Yeah,
because and oftentimes you can be out in places, and the only place you can go into is the disabled. You know, you have to split the difference and go into the disabled toilet, and then you come out of the disabled toilet, and there's some person sitting in a wheelchair going, "What the hell are you doing in there?"
Which is also not okay. So it is, and I do think it would. You know, this is kind of a sidebar as well. But if we had family-friendly toilets as opposed to simply this is the men's, this is the women's, this is you know, a special needs toilet. I think if we'd family-friendly toilets, you know, standard, especially in public spaces like shopping centres. And that, I think it would be great.
Yeah.
And it would ease this a lot.
Fair few suggestions for books. Look out for Dog Man and Captain Underpants books. Yes, Captain Underpants is a winner. I guarantee that your little 7-year-old will love them, says Mary in Westport. High interest, low ability books are great. Flat Stanley is brilliant.
Oh, I know Flat Stanley, yeah.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, lots of people suggesting that. The Treehouse series are brilliant. There are loads of pictures, but story as well. I got my 8-year-old to start reading, says Tanya. Dr. Becky, who has a PhD in children's literature, says take him to a book clinic. Children's Books Ireland are an amazing organisation. Yeah. I'm one of their book doctors.
I think that's a great suggestion.
Okay.
Yeah, Children's Book Ireland are brilliant. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we'll try and zip through this one quickly. Okay. Since my son has been 18 months old, he has cried at bath time. The minute he hits the water until he's wrapped up warm after he cried. It's always a real chore, so it's in and out of the bath as quick as possible. He's 3 now, and bath time hasn't really improved over the last year and a half. He hasn't had a bad experience that I know of. Any suggestions what to do?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a sensory experience, and I imagine he's getting quite sensory dysregulated in it. I don't know if you're still using, you know, one of those baby bath things that are quite small. Mm. But if you're putting him into the main family bath, be aware that that's quite a large space for a small child and a lot of water. So you can get these dividers. They're like a plastic thing that you can slot, so the water only goes to a portion of the bath.
Yeah.
And so you're creating a space within the space. I think that can be actually very containing and helpful for a young child in the bath. You can also get things like, because I just got gifted some myself, colour changing bubble bath, which actually makes it more interesting and stimulating to be in there. And I assume you're already letting him use toys or, you know, bath books as well in the bath. Support him with your arm physically if it's a fear that he's going to fall over or something like that. And keep his bath time as brief as possible. I know when they're babies, you can get those nets, you know, so they're only half lying in the water. But I don't know that they'd support a 3-year-old or most 3-year-olds. So consider if a shower would be easier. It may or may not. Some children hate the shower and some prefer it. So consider a shower and lots of nurture afterwards. He has to be washed. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can avoid it. So if you're going to be dipping him in quick and it is, you know, distressing, the fact that he does stop crying in the warm towel afterwards, make that a big ritual. The fluffy warm towel, rocking him, make it snow on him with powder or use nice lotion. Lots of nurture reassurance afterwards to co-regulate him back down from that arousal.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million for
coming
in to us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. Does Joe Biden have a problem with busing?
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.